Living with schizophrenia at 16 isn't just unusual, it's terrifying. When Adam's hallucinations transform from magical visions into giant bats with human eyes and needle-like fangs during chemistry class, his private world collides violently with reality. What follows is a journey through the fractured landscape of a brilliant young mind trying desperately to distinguish between what's real and what isn't. Adam's hallucinations have personalities of their own. Rebecca, a beautiful woman who performs cartwheels but never speaks, mobsters with raised guns, and a man in a bowler hat ominously repeating, "It's almost time." What makes his story so compelling isn't just these vivid characters living in his mind, but his remarkable self-awareness about them. When the experimental drug Tozaprex creates distance between Adam and his visions, he describes it perfectly. "Before, I couldn't distinguish reality from hallucination, but now I can watch my mind's projections like a movie." But what would you do if your mind created people who felt as real as anyone else? Adam develops relationships with his hallucinations, especially Rebecca. When she appears worried, he comforts her. This isn't just suffering from symptoms, it's learning to live with parts of yourself that others can't see or understand. In a life where control feels perpetually out of reach, cooking becomes Adam's refuge. The kitchen transforms into a sanctuary where precise measurements and methodical steps require such focus that his symptoms temporarily recede. There's something beautifully symbolic about creating order from chaos, turning raw ingredients into something nourishing. Adam's culinary talents aren't just therapy. They become core to his identity beyond his diagnosis. When Maya has a bad day, he prepares elaborate meals. Even as hallucinations of mobsters fire rounds into the ceiling, he methodically crafts cream puffs for his mother's baby shower. "I love feeding people. It gives me instant gratification and a sense of power," Adam confesses. In a life where he often feels powerless against his own mind, cooking offers immediate validation. During sleepless nights crowded with hallucinations, he bakes until dawn, finding peace in the silence of mixing ingredients. "I want to keep her far enough away that she never sees me as I actually am," Adam admits about Maya, the girl he's falling for. His fear stems from experience. Former friends abandoned him after learning of his condition, sending "get well soon" cards as if crazy is something you sleep off. When Adam learns he shares a name with the Sandy Hook shooter, he feels an unwanted connection. During a class discussion, someone whispers, "Why didn't the fucker just kill himself if he was so miserable?" Though not directly aimed at him, Adam knows they did. They just don't know they meant me. At home, his diagnosis transforms relationships. "I've gone from being a stepson he liked to a monster they must constantly watch," he observes about his stepfather Paul. Discovering hidden knives throughout their house reveals the painful distrust his secrecy creates. Adam lives where others fear his potential violence, yet never address this fear openly. Every interaction becomes a performance, every relationship built on partial truths. "I'm jealous of people with regular problems like appearance insecurities or homework stress. Even divorce or death isn't worse than needing medication to control your own mind." Adam's profound sense of difference initially makes authentic connection seem impossible. Yet, connection finds him anyway. Maya enters his life with quick, hummingbird-like movements, leading him to biology class. Their relationship grows through studying and academic team practices. When she brings him water during mass after noticing his medication struggles, we see the beginnings of acceptance. Their physical intimacy represents more than teenage romance. It's a counterpoint to Adam's isolation. After their first sexual encounter, he reflects, "I wasn't nervous despite us both being virgins. I knew I loved her." These connections make him feel he could tell her everything about my condition. Equally moving is Adam's friendship with Dwight, who visits after Adam's hospitalization with a Wii console, as if nothing changed. When Adam reminds him that he's a schizophrenic nutcase, Dwight acknowledges this and moves on, as if it didn't matter. Isn't this what we all secretly hope for? To be seen completely and accepted anyway? The experimental drug Tozaprex initially creates distance between Adam and his hallucinations, allowing him to recognize rather than be consumed by them. But this miracle comes with significant costs. Headaches, light sensitivity, insomnia, and tardive dyskinesia plague him daily. He wryly notes pharmaceutical commercials where potential side effects are terrifying: heart attacks, anxiety, death, and my personal favorite, anal leakage. When doctors taper Adam off Tozaprex because he's exhibited signs of resistance, their clinical language reduces him to a lab rat. The dosage reduction triggers mounting anxiety as symptoms return. Unlike 65% of schizophrenics in the study, Adam isn't improving. His hallucinations intensify, with the mob boss declaring, "We're not supposed to help. We'll just hear. Always hear." After the prom incident lands Adam in the hospital, his new medication makes him feel like the walking dead, the treatment becoming another challenge to navigate. You didn't let me choose. Maya's declaration reveals Adam's fundamental mistake, making relationship decisions without consulting her. Her statement, "I'm not asking for fair, nobody gets fair," acknowledges difficulties while refusing to let them dictate their future. This theme of choice permeates Adam's relationships. His mother and Paul support him despite their fears. When Paul writes that being a parent means becoming what your children need most and calls Adam his son, he's deliberately embracing him completely. Paul's simple, "It's okay, Adam," offers transformative, unconditional acceptance. Dwight makes a similar choice by treating Adam exactly the same after learning about his condition, bringing a wee and eating Oreos as usual. His approach shows acceptance requires no grand gestures, just consistent presence. Most importantly, Adam begins to choose himself, including his hallucinations. When Maya asks, "What do you see?" he no longer hides, eventually comforting Rebecca even in public, following Maya's advice to just do it when needed. Adam articulates a fundamental challenge. You can't know what it means to doubt everything, to walk into a room and pretend it's empty because you're not sure if the people are real. This questioning extends to his relationships, treatments, and future. When Adam hallucinates Maya being hit by a truck, his panic reveals how schizophrenia makes even basic relationships feel tenuous. His relief upon seeing her the next morning highlights the exhausting vigilance required when reality feels negotiable. By the narrative's end, Adam hasn't eliminated these uncertainties, but has developed a more nuanced relationship with them. Reflecting on Dumbledore's words, "Of course it is happening inside your head, Harry, but why on earth should that mean that it is not real?" he moves toward accepting subjective reality. His decision to speak directly to his therapist symbolizes growth. "I'm not giving up," he explains. "I just don't need to fight you anymore." Adam discovers that connection is possible without certainty. Courage isn't eliminating fear, but moving forward despite it.